I am an only child. I come from Market Hill originally. And my parents, I didn't come from a Christian home. But my parents were good parents. And you've heard that so often. And I pray for them daily that in the Lord's grace that he will save them. And I continue to pray for them. So you can see that I didn't have much of a Christian influence from that. But I did have a Christian influence in the form of a grandmother. And I suppose I didn't have a great relationship with my parents. And it's only now, over the past couple of years, that that relationship has developed. But my grandmother and I suppose my uncle were a big influence to me. We lived on a small farm, or I lived with my grandmother most of the time. And she was a godly woman. And she often spoke of God to me over the dinner table. You know, always was the Bible. There was two things always open on my grandmother's table, was the newsletter and the Bible. And those two things kept her going. But she had a great influence on me. I didn't realise it then, but as I look back, I can see the influence that she actually had. And those seeds that she put onto that granite ground, the Lord managed to root and use in later life. And I'll come to that later. I also had an uncle who was more like a father to me, I suppose. And I can remember back to 5, 6, I used to go down into the low room, as we called it. And my uncle would do a little book with me called Quest. And I always remember that. And I can remember he ran a good news club in Market Hill. And I can remember a lot of things that would have been taught there and different things he would have taken us to. So that was an influence in my life up to, you know, probably secondary school. And I was getting quite good at football. And I suppose into secondary school I started playing a lot of football and things like that. And I was getting better and better at it. I was quite good at it and all the rest of it. And that led me into, you know, different people, different groups and things like that. But I also, I suppose in the P7 year, if I think back, a lot of my life's blank to me. As you'll see, find out why. But I can remember I played a cornet, and I was in a silver band. My dad had obviously had a friend in a silver band, and I played the cornet for a number of years. Maybe from I was maybe 9, 10 till I was about 12 or thereabouts. But it's just as I was thinking about this today, the devil takes every opportunity. That's one thing that he does. He's relentless to continually blind people. And the reason I say that is, this was a silver band, but I was introduced to a guy who was a few years older than me, another guy called Dean. But he introduced me to a certain type of music. And let's just say that it didn't bring glory to God. It brought glory to Satan. People talk about heavy metal, things like that. This is something called black metal, death metal. And he gave me a tape. And I went home and listened to it. And I liked what I heard. It was different. And for the next number of years, I got more and more into this music. See, what I want to share with you tonight is that I was wandering. I hadn't given my life to the Lord. I knew things and all the rest of it. But this was different. This excited me. And over the next number of years, I have to say that it did have a big influence in my life. Till I was in my mid to late teens, it darkened my attitudes. It made my relationship with my parents worse. Friendships were frayed because I was being heavily influenced by satanic forces. Quite simple. And that's why I suppose if you're a parent or a grandparent here tonight, always just watch out what the young ones are listening to. It doesn't necessarily have to bring glory to darkness, but there's a lot of music out there that just send out subliminal messages about anarchy and all sorts of things. So be careful. Always be careful of what your kids are listening, because you just don't know where it's going to lead. And I want to come back to that because I believe that in your testimony, you need to be aware of the influences that were in your life before Christ was your influence. As I said, I grew up in Market Hill, South Armagh. It's quite a loyal little area. In fact, it's very loyal. And the reason I say that is when I was about 13, I joined a local Blood and Thunder band. And I stayed in it for the next 7-8 years. But again, that led me down paths that I didn't need to go down. I was young, very easily influenced, because I had no moral compass. By this stage, my grandmother, you know, I loved her, but I wasn't listening to her. My uncle had moved off. I was just, in my early teens, mid-teens, just living a life that the way I wanted to. And I was being influenced by other people. And let's just say that it led down paths that through the rest of my life to the Lord reached down. Had a huge influence on me. Led me into violence, stupidity, crime, all the rest of it. But one thing it did introduce to me was alcohol. And that, for the next number of years, ended up almost ruining me. So you see, back then I was just everywhere. I was willing to follow anything that was exciting, that was different, that just gave me a buzz or whatever. But you see, I want to go back to this idea of the music. Because it did structure my thinking a lot of the time. And I can remember, I was very deeply involved in it. And I wore an inverted cross for a number of years. Obviously that is anti-Christ. You have to remember, I wasn't listening to anybody. You don't know nothing. I'd become rogue in my thinking and I was just one of those people. But I can remember my uncle, who was a very gracious man. He had to see, watch a lot, hear about me a lot, but he never was angry. He was very gracious, as was my grandmother. And he asked me one day, he said, "What is that you're wearing around your neck?" And I took it off and I said, "It's just what I'm following. This is what I believe in. This is good." All those sorts of things that a teenager of maybe 15 or 16 would say in angst and rebellion. Now this was an iron cross. This was a heavy thing. And I can remember him, as I look back now, he said to me, "There's things in life that seem to excite and appease your appetite. They only seem it." He says they last that long. But he says there's something waiting that has no ending. Eternity. And I can remember he took that. He put it in his hand. And I was standing at my grandmother's kitchen at the scullery door. And he says, "It's rubbish." And when he opened up his hand, it was in two. Now you couldn't have beat this thing with a hammer. I am not a sensationalist. I'm not saying anything that's exciting the senses. But that showed me something. Shortly after that, you know what? I lost interest in it. I just said to myself, I think I was growing up. And I just, no, I'm not interested in this anymore. Now, it left its mark on me. It left its mark physically and it left its mark in my thinking. But when I was around 15 or 16, I started to realise that I had an affinity towards a certain subject in school, biology. And that's why I was saying to Jonathan, a title for this is From Atheism to the Almighty. And I think from around 16 till I was about 29, evolution and I suppose alcohol were the two big determinants in my life. A-levels came and I was taught more about evolution and it made sense to me. It made sense to me, you know, I'd heard about God. I had followed this other way, this listening to this music. It had done nothing for me in the long run, so I gave up on it as well. And this evolution came along. And it required no belief in anything that wasn't seen or supernatural. And this is the path that I took. Because as a budding young scientist, it did make sense to me. The evidence supposedly was all there. So that led me to finish school, and I went to university and I studied biology. And I got involved in the Evolutionary Society. I actually co-wrote an undergraduate paper that was published on evolution of things called Litterina, little periwinkles that no one has any interest in. But that's what I was steeped in. I just read an article there in the back of that paper that you have about Professor Dawkins. I met the man. I followed the man. And I even started to contradict some of his biology. I was that involved in evolution. So he, today, all he is Satan's mouthpiece. It's as simple as that. There's no truth in the man. But you see, this got hold of me and it made sense to me. And it is the path that I then followed. And it guided me. Because I became very bitter against God. Against anything, really. Against any religions. I had no time for them. I didn't want to hear anything about it. If someone started to talk to me about it, I just rubbished them and just walked off. No interest at all. I'd heard about it. No, nothing. But again, through my university time, alcohol. It was getting an even bigger grip on my life. And it almost cost me my degree. My life was a mess. I was going everywhere. I mentioned this compass. I was sitting meditating on something the other night and I was just saying to myself, if I look back on my life and I had a compass in my hand, it wouldn't have known where north was, the right way to go. It was just going wherever. But you see, that's when people don't have a guide. That is when people have nothing firm in their lives that means something. But it was affecting me. It was affecting and influencing relationships, friendships. As I said, it was a mess. So I left university and all this, my life previous, I was 20, 21. And I just said, I need to get out of here. See, I was always running from the past. Always running from stupidity and mistakes that I made upon mistakes. Poor choices. Went to England. I always wanted to teach. That's one thing that when I look back, there was always a thread. I always loved biology. Wanted to tell people about biology, about evolution. Wanted to share this. Wanted more people and more people to know about it. So I got a job and I've taught in Blackburn for a year, and then I lived in the Lake District for a few years and taught there. But again, poor choices, mistakes, poor lifestyle, alcohol. You see, it's continually a big part of my life. And it was making me a real, real mess. To the point where I was starting to struggle with the thing that I loved, which was teaching. I could see it having an impact. I wasn't basically physically fit. By this stage, the football, I played hockey as well, played hockey for Kendall Town. Had to quit that because it was interfering with my social life. It was meaning I couldn't go out on a Friday night because I had to play. So I didn't, no way. So I give all those things up. And then I decided to come home. And I came home and I remember saying to my mother, I see a place there in the newspaper I was looking called Auchnacloy. Where is Auchnacloy? I'm from Market Hill, you know, and then I was in England. I'd never heard of Auchnacloy. I don't think it was ever. And it's just about 30 miles up the road from us. So I saw the post, went over and got the job, basically. I've been there for the past 13 years. So again, my life lived for the weekend. Friday night, Saturday, Sunday. Then the weekend started becoming Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Then the weekend started Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It was getting a bigger and bigger grip on my life. And to tell you the truth, I was struggling. I really was. When I look back at that, I just say my life was a complete mess. A mess of poor choices and all the rest of it. I had no guidance. I had no moral compass, as I keep talking about. And then, one day, just out of the blue, I got this phone call from a friend, George, who was as different as the colour of that speaker to the wall to me. He was Christian. I think the only Christian that I had any time for, because George came through school with me. And I think somewhere deep down I had respect for him somewhere. Because he was a guy that stood up for something completely different to what I believed in. And wasn't willing to back down. And he phoned me one evening and he said, I'm getting married. So the last person on earth I thought was getting married with George McKelvey. But he did. And he invited me to the wedding and that was it. I lost contact with him again. And maybe a couple of years later, he phoned me again. And he says, we want to invite you down for supper. And that started, I suppose, a friendship again with someone I would not associate with. But God had a greater plan. And I can remember going down on Sunday evenings and many hot debates. And I can see George storming out, raging, furious, because I wasn't listening. And I had an answer for everything that he said, but I was being calm. Needless to say, I didn't know the impact that George was going to have on my life. And again, my life just carried on. Until I came to a real low ebb. I had many dark thoughts. I had no money because of my lifestyle. And I had debts to pay. And that was a big problem to me. And I can remember my mother came round and she saw the state I was in. And I told her. And Mum and Dad bailed me out of a lot. But that didn't stop me. I just maintained my lifestyle. And the words that I'm going to use now, you'll find in Ephesians 2 and 4. But God. I remember looking at that, and it appears over 400 times in the Bible. And every time you read but God, something good happens. He changes something. And I was driving home one Monday afternoon. And I remember passing Killalea, County Armagh. And all of a sudden I felt a pain across my chest and down into my left arm. And I looked in the rear view mirror. And I said, God, not like this. Why did I say that? This came out of the mouth from someone who, quite frankly, hated the idea of God or the mention of Him. And I came again and I pulled in and I had a fair idea what was going on. It was my heart. There's only so much your body can take. And I phoned my mother. My mother worked for the police and my father worked for the security force as well. And I said, I might check your left phone, an ambulance, something's not right. An ambulance came along and I can remember the ambulance boy wiring me up, as if I wasn't wired up enough. But he kept asking me all these questions. I remember looking up to him and I said, shut up, please. Because going through my head was this. Why did I say God not like this? Do you ever see in the movies or whatever, your life flashing before you? Well, I saw mine. If you've never experienced it, don't dish things like this. I saw mine flash before me. And went to hospital and the doctor said, basically, you need to stop what you're doing. and change your lifestyle. Because if you don't, your body is going to basically reject you. Grand job. That was probably, as I said, the Monday, the Tuesday, said that. Friday night I was out again. That was in November. And little did I know, looking back, that was God. I'm about to do something to you. And I woke up on the first Saturday in February. I was 29. And I woke up in a house, and it had a ceiling exactly like this. And I was just looking, I looked around me, I was on a sofa, and I said, where am I? Where is this place? And there was two wee kids running about the house. I didn't even know who they were. Hitting my feet and laughing and running away. And I can remember just looking up and I said, this can't be the life that I'm meant to live. Now, no one else can show you that except the Holy Spirit. From where I was coming from, as far from east to west, that was the last thing that I was thinking. I was content, as I thought. I had friends that liked the lifestyle that I liked, supposed friends. But at that moment, God opened my eyes. And He broke into my life. And I went home. Probably shouldn't have drove. But I went home and I went to the back hill, as we call it. We had a small farm. And I leaned over the gate. And the words that I said were these. I said, Lord, You have promised me paradise. I want a ticket to paradise. It's all the words that I knew. The words weren't important. He knew exactly what I meant. Because He had put that in my mind. And I walked up home. I went into my grandmother's house. And you walk through the kitchen and then into the scullery, and the scullery and then into the kitchen. And as I said, she was always where she was. The spread of the table, reading the newsletter and the Bible there before. And she looked up and she smiled. And she said to me, I know. And I looked at her. And I said, what do you know? She said, you're saved. What? How do you know? I can see it in your face. The anger gone. I was a new person standing in front of her. These were all words that I probably hadn't heard in 20 odd years. And I went into the bathroom. And I got down on my knees and I said, God, I hope you know what I meant when I said that earlier. I want you to take over my life. Because I'm making a mess of it. I can't control it. Please. I must ask Him, I don't know, many times that day. Just making sure that He knew. You have to understand that I was an infant. In His eyes, I had just started a new life. And I'm sure He often smiled down when I said that to Him. You know, just checking. And I phoned George. And I said to him, I now know what that voice was that you always said is somewhere in the background. And remember, I met him and he gave me a hug and he says, welcome to the family. And the next words he said to me was, and I'll never forget them, he said, don't think you're in for an easy ride. Okay? And that's what he said to me. He said, you've got a guide now, basically. So that opened up. That's how the Lord broke into my life. It wasn't through any meeting, because the Lord doesn't need any particular place to work in a person's life. It's the timing, His choosing, and His method. It's all about Him. And He had a plan for me. I remember being asked once by a man, what took you so long? And he said, well, it's really nothing to do with me. It's all to do with God. It was Him that had a time and a place and a date and all the rest of it when He was going to break into my life and start using me for His will and purpose. So, needless to say, Monday I went into school. I was a new person. My mother actually used to come for me on a Saturday evening, a lot of evenings, and offer to drive me to places because she was wild scared that I would do stupid things. And she came into me that Saturday evening. I said, no, I'm not going anywhere. And that, she, remember, she looked at me. But Monday I went into school and the lady there, Hilary Colbert, I was sitting, I can remember, I was sitting in the computer room and the door was there and she walked past, morning, Dean. And then she came back. And the next thing she said, is there something, what did I look like before this? And she said the exact same things as my grandmother said, basically, and she gave me a big hug. From then, I was introduced to what was known as a coffee bar. Now, that word, coffee bar, I had this image of coffee along the back of a bar. I hadn't a clue. I thought, well, there's a bar, there's coffee in it, okay. But I was introduced to a coffee bar. And from there, I was introduced to One Mission Society, the mission that I now work alongside. I'm a teacher, but I work alongside with One Mission Society. I was introduced to a guy called Melvin Kelly, who may have been here, I don't know, but he was a missionary out in Mozambique. And I can remember that night, it was like a Christmas meal, and he stood up and he said, could everyone in this, now I was saved in February, this was later on that year, and he said, could everyone stand up that has been involved in Christian work over the summer? There's only one person really sitting that night, and that was me. And that annoyed me. I was this new person. I wanted to do stuff. I wanted now to just give my life over to the Lord, but I wasn't ready. He had preparations to do. So I chatted to him after, and he said, come out to Mozambique, and because you have the odd wee holiday in the summertime, just in case you've nothing to do for 2 months. So I goes, okay. Filled in the forms, went to an interview and went to Mozambique. Spent 2 months there. I taught English in a school. And also, when you go out to Africa and they tell you you've got a classroom, they don't tell you you have to make your classroom before you can teach. So when I went out there, I was given this room. And there was boxes of tiles in the corner. And grouting and all sorts of stuff. So I had to basically tile the place. Now thankfully coming up through life, I was quite handy. But that introduced me to mission. Then I went to India, South Korea, been to Colombia last year. Spent a lot of time in the Republic of Ireland. And God was starting to use the gifts that he had given me that I wasn't using before he'd saved me for his purposes. I used to tell young people about evolution. Now, I get more questions in my classes about creation. I'm involved in SU. I get opportunities every single day to talk to kids. I often hear other teachers, oh, you can't say that, show me where. Why can I not talk about this? Where's the law? No law yet? You must keep on plodding. And I find that every day in school, when I talk about, for example, the Big Bang, a load of nonsense, by the way, when I talk about that, I have more kids asking me about, you know, what's this idea of evolution? And when people talk to me, adults, about evolution, and this stumps them, I said, which one? And they go, what do you mean? It just shows me how much they actually know what they're talking about. I said, which evolution do you believe in? And they're left like, I love it because I know more than them. About evolution. I was steeped in this stuff. So I said, well, are you an atheistic evolutionist? Are you a deistic evolutionist? Are you a theistic evolutionist? They usually talk about something else. But there's the unfortunate thing. Evolution, Satan is using it, and it's creeping into Christian, evangelical, may I even say, Christian circles. You see, I was an atheistic evolutionist. I believed that there was no God, no nothing, all this idea of chance. It just happened and evolved. Then you have the deists who believe that God, yes, made the universe and then said, I've made it, turned his back and did something else. Let it sort itself out. And then you have the theistic evolutionists. The Christian evolutionists. What a load of nonsense. The two words don't even, they're like oil and water. Christian evolutionists? No. What do they believe in? These theists, they believe that God used evolution to create man. If it was such an important thing, would you not find it in the scriptures? No, you don't find it there. But you do find, between verse 27 and 28, then God had a council. And he created man in his image, separate from the animals. Evolution is a theory. It's a man-made idea. But people love it. They love the big words. They love all this scientific stuff. And let me tell you something, when I look back, it takes more faith, because atheism is a faith, to believe that you came from dirt to what you are now, than God created in the beginning. And God has used me to go around churches to talk about Genesis. To talk about the first even three chapters of Genesis. He has given me that passion. Because I can remember, and in this I'll finish, going to hear a guy called Ken Ham. I'd never heard of Ken Ham before, but I heard he was into biology. And George and Claire took me to Ken Ham, and I was sitting there, probably at that stage, 6-7 months into this, a theistic evolutionist, I suppose. Yeah, God could use evolution. Still wasn't letting go of that. I even had a portrait of Darwin in my bedroom. And I went and heard Ken Ham. And when he finished, I said to myself, do you know what? That makes sense. And I remember I came home and I said to Darwin, sorry, buddy. And I put him in the bin. And that was it. So you see, the Lord even is using now my knowledge of evolution to go and share the reality that evolution is a man-made theory. There is no evidence at all. I would love to talk to you all night about this stuff, but I can't. So what I have hopefully showed you tonight was that God took a mess. God took someone that had absolutely no interest in him at all and broke into his life and created a new being. And one thing that my grandmother, who's now at home with the Lord, always taught me, never give up on prayer. Because she told me for 29 years, she never once stopped praying for me morning and night. And I'm sure when I look back now, I broke her heart daily. I stressed my mother and father out. But I was lost in the wilderness, not willing to listen to anyone. And thankfully now, you know, my relationship with my parents is getting better. They love my children are a great way. And I even hear my dad now reading stories about Jonah and Esther, and you know, it does me the power of good. Because you just don't know. God could use even that to take the cataracts off a man's eyes, break the stone in his heart, and reveal himself even through a child. So people, if you're praying for someone in your own family tonight, as George Muller taught us, never give up. Keep on praying, because it was the prayers of my grandmother and my uncle that basically have brought me to where I am today.